जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी, यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी, जमुना तीरा वनजारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, प्रभुपाद 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 जय प्रभुपाद, निथाय गौर हरि बोल हरि बोल हरि बोल गौर हरि बोल, जय निथाय गौर प्रेमानंदे गंतराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text number 49.
Baladvija Suranmitra Pitre Bratre Guru Druha Namesyan Nirayan Moksho हि अपि वर्षायुतायुतै बालद्विज सुरन्मित्रा पितृ भ्रातृ गुरुद्रुहा नमेस्यान् निरयान् मोक्षो हि अपि वर्षायुतायुतै बालद्विज सुरन्मित्र पितृ भ्रातृ गुरुद्रुहा नमेस्यान् निरयान् मोक्षो हि अपि वर्षायुतायुतै।
Mataji's, what the word meaning? Bala, boys. Dvija, the twice born. Suhrit, well-wishers. Mitra, friends. Pitra, parents. Bhratra, brothers. Guru, preceptors. Druha, one who has killed. Na, never. Me, my. Syat, there shall be. Nirayat, from hell. Moksha, liberation. He, certainly. Api, although. Varsha, years. Ayuta, millions. Ayutai, being added. Translation. I have killed many boys, brahmanas, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors, and brothers. Though I live millions of years, I will not be relieved from the hell that awaits me from all the sins. Purport by His Divine Grace, Laisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Whenever there is a war, there is certainly a massacre of many innocent living beings, such as boys, brahmanas and women, whose killing is considered to be the greatest of sins. They are all innocent creatures, and in all circumstances, killing of them is forbidden in the scriptures. Maharaj Yudhishthir was aware of these mass killings. Similarly, there were friends, parents and preceptors also on both sides, and all of them were killed. It was simply horrible for him to think of such killing, and therefore he was thinking of residing in hell for millions and billions of years.
Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Dadamayam Dadati Svaparantikam Nama Om Vishnuparaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nidhi Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Kauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Reshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So we read the translation once more. I have killed many boys, brahmanas, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors and brothers. Though I live millions of years, I will not be relieved from the hell that awaits me from all these sins. Welcome everybody to another day of Srimad Bhagavatam class. seeking the blessings of all devotees so that I can speak something for my purification, and if there is some inspiration, I'll be very grateful to all my seniors who kind of helped me speak whatever I can today. Hare Krishna. So in this particular section, we are seeing how Yudhishthir Maharaj, in this particular verses, the ones before and the ones kind of coming later than this, is very much expressing his grief for all the massacre that has happened during the war in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. I mean, if you just kind of ask yourself a question, who will you kind of choose, Yudhishthir or Duryodhan, in case you are given an option? Suppose, I mean, you don't have any background of who these two people are, who will you choose? You say, okay, you have two options in front of you, Duryodhan and Yudhishthir. It is similarly like going to a movie and watching a movie, and then where you realize that only after you sit in the movie and you watch it for maybe a half an hour or some maybe some time more, you'll realize who is the hero, who is the villain. You need to kind of go through and kind of, you know, just as you need to watch and then you understand certain traits, certain personalities, certain features, the way they behave, the way they conduct themselves, then it becomes clear as to who is kind of on the side of dharma, who is not on the side of adharma. So similarly, how do you understand? Whom will you choose if you need to vote? I vote for Yudhishthir or I vote for Duryodhan. So basically, it is based on the precincts of dharma. Who is on the side of dharma? Who is not on the side of dharma? Sometimes it is said that character is more important or competence is more important. If you see, you may have the best of character in you. So that is very good. But then, if you don't have competence, then basically the job might not be done. You'll be just sitting with good character, but the vehicle doesn't move ahead. Similarly, if you have all the competence, I mean, your vehicle is moving at, you could say, hundreds of kilometers per hour speed, but then there's one little glitch. And what's that glitch? There is a kind of discrepancy in character. So that one little thing will nullify the entire kind of gallons of blood and effort that you put in creating that competency. So an ideal balance is where we have character and competence, both of them, they go hand in hand. So here in this section, we kind of see how Yudhishthir Maharaj, he is kind of the leader of the Pandavas, so as to say. And through these verses, now the flow of events is such that we know how the events have unfolded up to now. The war has taken place. The Pandavas have been victorious in the war, and now it is there on a golden platter for Yudhishthir to just sit on the throne. People are kind of very happy. People are very happy, eager to participate in the rule under Yudhishthir Maharaj. It is not that someone is revolting under him, or there are kind of morchas and so many petitions filed against that we don't want him as a leader. Even then, we see a person like Yudhishthir Maharaj behaving in this kind. So that brings us to the point of discussion and theme for today's class, where we see how this leader is very conscious of his surroundings. He doesn't need to actually speak all these things, so as to say. He is not bound to basically kind of grieve on this situation. But still, Maharaj Yudhishthir is exhibiting such exemplary qualities. So the topic for our discussion, the theme, will be conscious leadership. This is what we've kind of chosen for today's discussion. So this will be the central line amongst which kind of the discussion will revolve. So there will be a story from the Mahabharata, another story from the Ramayana to delineate and highlight, keeping this point in mind. So whenever we are discussing something, please keep in kind of mind that this will be the theme that is kind of revolving around the entire discussion. And then finally, we'll also kind of try to touch upon what are the steps or methods you need or features which are required to actually, you know, have leaders develop this conscious attitude or leadership. So this will be the sum and structure of today's discussion that we will kind of undertake. So it is said that Krishna chose the Pandavas personally why to establish dharma, and why did Krishna choose the Pandavas to establish dharma? If we need to know that, then of course the Srimad Bhagavatam mentions that in very brief in this particular section. But then this same section is mentioned very, very elaborately in the pages of the Mahabharata, in the Shanti Parva, maybe verses chapter 6 to chapter 40. So there is a host of discussions that take place. Once Yudhishthir makes this intention clear that, okay, now I want to renounce the throne, I do not want to basically occupy the throne, and then the reason that he is speaking in this verses and the next and the preceding verses, that so much sin has been accrued. So point to note here is that Arjuna also kind of had some kind of grievances like this that was beginning in the before the war started. And it is that great leaders or great people suffer for a great cause, or they grieve for a great cause. So due to Arjuna's grief, what was born? The Bhagavad Gita appeared. And when Yudhishthir is similarly kind of, so what, undergoing similar circumstances, oh, I have killed all my kinsmen, our children have been destroyed, I have lost my seniors, my preceptors have no longer, what is the use of me kind of ruling this kingdom now? For whom I am ruling? I don't want, I am responsible for the entire massacre. So this is similarly, you could see Yudhishthir Maharaj is in a similar mood as to Arjuna before the war. Now the difference is he is grieving after the war. But then, as they say, great people, whatever they do, there is something kind of great coming in store. So then we see when we proceed in the future chapters, what will unfold because of this act of Yudhishthir? The beautiful instructions of Bhishma Dev. So when the going gets tough, the tough get going. So now, because of all these things, in future we will have, I mean, what is the result of all those things? 5,000 years after they've kind of gone, still that impact, we are sitting here today and discussing lessons to be implemented in our life from their particular behavior, their particular way of life, what they have lived. So that is the power and impact that the Acharyas and the Pandavas and everybody have kind of created and left behind for us. You can imagine the irony and the complexity, or the distinct separation in the behavior of Yudhishthir Maharaj and today's leaders. Here is a person who is having everything set, prepared, ready. All he needs to do is give the date and time, and people are willing to be kind of submissive to him. People are willing to follow whatever he says. But then he says, no. I'm not ready for this. I don't want to do this. And in today's circumstances, you could kind of, you know, imagine some of our political leaders. What are they up to? They will go to any extent today just for one thing. They will go to any extent to say, mera khurchi to sambhal ke rehna chahiye, baki sab main baad mein adjust karunga. Basically, my chair at any cost, everything else will revolve around that. But here the chair is there, but the person is revolving everywhere but the chair. So this is the difference, stark difference, and it is very much depicting conscious leadership from the behavior of Yudhishthir Maharaj. So now let us kind of, you know, let's go to the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam and let's dive there and see what. There is a very, very beautiful conversation which happens just after Yudhishthir Maharaj makes this intention clear. So over the next few minutes, we will try to understand. When you kind of listen this conversation, please keep this particular theme in your mind. So the chapter 6 and chapter 7 of the Shanti Parva of the Mahabharata, Yudhishthir Maharaj is in despair. He laments to Arjuna saying the same particular things in different verses. But the only difference is there are a lot of verses given there in depth. If there is one verse, there will be 10 in the Mahabharata for this. So here Yudhishthir says, I am responsible for killing my kinsmen. I am responsible for my children dying, and so on and so forth. And he expresses that I am the only cause for which, because everything has happened, I cannot rule the kingdom. Now you imagine someone who you have voted as your leader, and then after he has won the election, he says, Nahi bhaiya, I am not fit to rule. I am not going to kind of, you know, lead y'all. I am sorry. I just need to resign and get away from this post. And you know, everybody is depending on you. I mean, he is the person who is fit and qualified to lead. And all of a sudden, he gives them such a big jolt. So then what happens? This entire conversation now, it is kind of not happening in a derogatory manner or in a very kind of, you know, criticizing manner. The beauty about this conversation is, although they are freely expressing themselves, but still, it's a very, very beautiful communication or not an aggressive debate which goes on. Like in today's times, we have a lot of aggressive debates going on about discussing so many issues. But then at the end of that, there is no solution out of it. But the beauty of these high quality narrations and communications and discussions which take place is at the end of the day, Yudhishthir Maharaj was not attached to basically his opinion. That unfolds as the Srimad Bhagavatam progresses. So you are in chapter 8 of the Shanti Parva. Arjuna then kind of tells Yudhishthir Maharaj that he tries to cheer up Yudhishthir Maharaj by saying that, "Do not fear, O Yudhishthir, you have acquired this by your own prowess. We have acquired this by our prowess. No one has kind of given us on a golden platter or it's not come to you without working hard. Blood, sweat and tears have gone in kind of earning what you have, you richly and truly deserve. Every bit of it you deserve. So what is the cause for lamentation?" He says, a person procrastinating can never acquire prosperity in his life. And why did you kill all the kings if this was your intention before the war? You should have let us know. And then further Arjuna tells Yudhishthir, in the absence of an able king to govern the kingdom, maybe the subjects might be plundered and then the sin will accrue to the person who is responsible for this. In response in chapter 9, Yudhishthir Maharaj replies to Arjun. Arjun, listen to what I say. You know, keep your mind, eyes and mouth and, you know, heart open. And you be open-minded. Do not be close-minded to me, what I am saying. And then Yudhishthir again repeats the same thing and he says, see, I am responsible for the entire thing. My consciousness does not permit me. I am going to go to the forest, sustain on roots, fruits and berries, shave my head, wear robes, and then for the rest of my life, I will kind of take this method of life and give up my life in the forest. Now Bhima cannot kind of keep quiet. And then Bhima intervenes. He says, and one thing to note in this discussion is, before we kind of progress, the entire kind of scriptures or, you know, our shastras, they are based on the aspect of dharma, artha, kama, moksha. That is the kind of thread which weaves our shastras and it is very important for establishing varnasharam dharma. So whenever any discussions like this happen, you can kind of, you know, see a tinge of dharma, artha, kama, moksha kind of embedded within all these discussions or verses in our scriptures, which is very essential, Krishna knows, and for that he has selected Yudhishthir as an able leader. And Bhima now tells Yudhishthir, this is chapter 10 of the Shanti Parva, Bhima tells Yudhishthir that, where has your, something like Krishna tells, you know, Arjuna, utastva kasmalam idam, similarly that kind of, you know, meaning Bhima says, where has your intelligence kind of, you know, absconded you? I mean, I am not seeing this Yudhishthir as who I generally visualize. What are you speaking? What are you saying? He says, you are behaving like a foolish and unintelligent reciter of the scriptures who just recites merely and doesn't understand a word of what he is speaking. Bhima further says, you could have told us before the war of this intention, I would have not lifted a bow and arrow or even a sword or my mace. Why have we participated in this bloody warfare? Bhima says, this act of yours, O Yudhishthir, is like a person, he gives five or six comparisons, like a person who's gone to dig a well. And then he says, just about when the water was about to come, this guy comes up, all with his body covered up with mud, but the purpose has been lost. He did not kind of, you know, get the water. Bhima further says, you are acting like a person who set out on a long journey to achieve his goal, but returns midway before achieving his goal. He further says, this action of yours of renouncing everything is compared to a person who has killed all his enemies and then finally dies at his own hands. And this behavior of yours, oh my brother, is something like a person who has climbed
a tall tree and then collected the honey on the tall tree, and then before tasting it, he dies. Oh, Yudhishthir, this behavior of yours and the thought process of yours is like someone who is very hungry. And then when he procures food, when he obtains food, he refuses to eat it. So these are some of the reasons that Bhima quotes in the Mahabharata, kind of pointing out to Yudhishthir. Now remember, why is he telling all these things? Because he is Dharmaraj, Raja Rishi. He is qualified to rule. He is not a person because of who kind of, you know, stands in the elections, and because of such opposition candidates, a person who seemingly having very good qualifications has not been defeated at least for two terms and maybe the third term also. So this is kind of the quality of Yudhishthir Maharaj, who is exemplary and fit for the throne. And when such a person is not kind of ready to take up, so then there is naturally kind of people who are concerned about the general populace and who are speaking in concern, trying to get back, you know, Yudhishthir where he belongs. So he chastises Yudhishthir in the next few verses. And then he says, we have become the butt of criticism. Don't you realize, my brother? Just because you are the eldest amongst all of us, we are doing nothing but obeying your orders. Then Bhima says, we are empowered by might. We are empowered by strength. We are empowered by intelligence, by knowledge, by energy. But we are forced. We are utterly helpless because we are younger than you. We have to just follow you. And then finally he says, if anybody could secure success from renunciation, merely kind of, you know, whatever it's kind of denoting false renunciation in this regard, then Bhima says, look at these trees and mountains who have been standing for years together practicing brahmachari life. They could have attained the perfection of life merely by kind of standing for, you know, millions of years doing this activity. What are you doing? Wake up, my brother Yudhishthir. You cannot act like this. So another kind of lesson that we learn from this is, Bhima was not a yes man. He was not kind of, you know, saluting. Of course, he would follow the leader at the end of the day. There was no doubt about that. He would follow his leader, obey their instructions, and roll out the kind of, you know, responsibilities that he has. But he would not shy away from speaking his mind in a very kind of respectful and, you know, courteous manner. So similarly, like there is an incident in the 1970s. There was one general, he was the first chief of the Indian Army, Sam Manekshaw. So I think the then Prime Minister, she calls him and he says, what is the mood in the eastern side of our country? So he says, there's a problem. So she says, well, solve it. So he says, what do you mean? Declare war. So he says, but we are not prepared. So here is the point. When the topmost person in the country is telling the general of the army, well, address the situation, I am commanding you, take the army and kind of, you know, declare a war against and solve the situation. But he is honest and he says, my army is not prepared for the war right now. If I kind of take my army, then we'll be on the losing side and we'll lose a lot of people. To her credit, the then Prime Minister agreed to what he said. And the result was, in a period of maybe 5 to 6 months later, we kind of declared war, we won the war, and Bangladesh was created. This was kind of early 1970s. So the principle and the purpose of kind of telling this is, you do not need to kind of always be a yes man. That always might not be a good quality. Yes, you need to follow, but you also need to express and communicate your thought process. If you especially see there is something which is not as per what it should be. So basically we move forward. In the chapter 11, now Arjuna kind of again, he kind of quotes a story from the Mahabharata. He tells Yudhishthir about young, you know, little-witted brahmanas who renounce their duties as householders, and then they kind of decide to live a life of ascetics. And then seeing them, Indra takes a lot of pity on them. And then he takes the form in disguise of a golden bird. Then the conversation accrues between Indra and these brahmanas who are trying to so-called practice renunciation in the forest. And then the entire discussion involves around karma. And finally the golden bird, the instructions, how they convince the brahmanas to basically go back to their houses and take responsibility for their performing their duties. So when Arjuna quotes this story to Yudhishthir, all because why? Because Yudhishthir, till now he is Dharmaraj practicing Dharma, but at this point, somehow that quality of his, or you could say weakness of heart, more than weakness of heart, we are focusing on, as a leader, he was very conscious to his surroundings. So that particular thought made him kind of, ooze with compassion for all his, followers. Taking responsibility for what that has happened is a natural quality of a leader. So Yudhishthir Maharaj, when he was in that mood, so basically the counter arguments are coming in whatever makes him kind of come back and sense prevails. Further, we see that now Nakul speaks. Arjuna has spoken, Bhima has spoken. Now in chapter 12, Nakul speaks. And Nakul speaks in chapter 12, chapter 13, Sahadev speaks. And the twin brothers also kind of speak in one particular way and one particular cause. And they kind of highlight the importance of the necessity of action for a king, for a leader, to always kind of, take action is very important. So Nakul from the 12th chapter, he kind of, in the Mahabharata, this section gives some of the features of a renunciate. So I found it interesting. I just thought, what the Mahabharata says about who an actual renunciant is. So it says the first thing is a man who is homeless and roams the world. Then he says a mendicant who seeks refuge under a tree, who observes the vow of silence. So as Vaishnavas, we can take it as no gossiping basically. He never cooks for himself, something like Madhukari. He practices restraint and control of senses. And he observes various vows. And then he is a person, a renunciate is a person, he should have the quality of being equipoised. Something like Mataras Parshastu Kaunteya. Actually, if Yudhishthir had practiced this, then at this particular point of time, there wouldn't be this discussion. I mean, there was no need for this discussion at all. But because he was overwhelmed with compassion for the atrocities that had, and he blamed himself to be responsible. So that is a beautiful discussion in the entire kind of Mahabharata. And then finally, the study of Vedas. So these are some of the points that Nakul mentions to Yudhishthir Maharaj. You are taking renunciation, but these are the qualities that you have to practice. And then Nakul further tells that when you kind of place on a weighing scale like Tulabhar, one side, the householder life, and the others, the other three, then you'll realize that the householder ashram balances all the other three ashrams together. So he says a person who understands this and abandons just merely the desire to enjoy the fruits of his action is qualified to achieve the ultimate liberation and the perfection of his life wherever he is. Either practicing his duties, discharging his duties as a king within the kingdom, or, within the forest. I mean, he doesn't need to artificially renounce everything and go to the forest. So discharge your duties, my dear Yudhishthir, and rightfully, because if you do not discharge, there will be mayhem and chaos in the entire kingdom. Then all the brothers have spoken up to now. Then whose turn is it to speak now? Chapter 14, Draupadi. So now, Draupadi speaks, and just as it is usual for a wife to kind of always expect respectful glances and words from her husband, so Draupadi, and love from her husband basically, so Draupadi is also expecting something from Yudhishthir because he was the eldest amongst all her husbands. And then she kind of goes to Yudhishthir in soothing words, she says, "My dear husband, why are you making your brothers cry? And their throat and their tongues have become dry like tatakas for all these years. What is it that has befallen upon you that you bring us all in despair in this particular situation?" She says, she reminds Yudhishthir, "Oh my dear husband, kindly remember that you are the ruler and emperor who had conquered everybody and everything. Charo dishao mein aapka raj tha. Right from the Meru mountain to the Jambudvip to the Kraunchadvip, the Bhadrashrava, the oceans and the islands." Draupadi is reminding Yudhishthir, "You are the ruler of all these places. What is it within your mind that still you are not satisfied after kind of gaining control over all these places. Further, she says, how can the words of my mother-in-law be false? Kunti Devi had promised, O princess of Panchali, I bless you that my son Yudhishthir will always keep you in happiness. How can those words be false? So these are various kind of reasons that, you know, the Pandavas are using. This is a very beautiful kind of conversation which is taking place. She says, if the eldest brother goes mad, then the younger brothers have no option but to helplessly kind of follow them. And then if they are sane, they lock him up in a room and basically give him medications, and instead one of them will rule the kingdom. Anyways, finally she says, I am such a fallen woman and worst of all females. Why? Because still I desire to live even after all my children have died. So these were the actual qualities of the Pandavas. Arjuna then says, this is chapter 15. Of course, we are just discussing snippets of the chapters. I mean, in the entire Mahabharata, when you read these sections, it is very beautiful to kind of go through the entire, you know, verse by verse in detail. Arjuna then in chapter 15 drives the importance of exercising the rod of chastisement as a king. He says, generally when a king takes oath, like Shivaji Maharaj or anybody, you could see, they kind of give him a stick. So what that stick, that danda, it represents that this person is empowered to deliver justice, that rod of chastisement or rod of justice. So Arjuna is beholding and kind of, you know, reminding Yudhishthir, please exercise that rod of chastisement that is rightfully yours. And finally, now we progress to the last chapter for our discussion in this section at least, where Bhima kind of, he was not supposed to speak, but he says, I'm so excited, I'm sorry, I'm speaking out of turn again. He couldn't restrain himself. Then he says that, how is it that you are king of the world? You who have mastered all knowledge and still you are clouded with kind of lamentation and grief at this point of time. Then Bhima tells, you are supposed to be equipoised. You are actually very equipoised. Like sometimes you see when there is too much of happiness, it is but natural, you know, for a person to go back and think of the times when they were in misery. And it neutralizes that particular feeling. And sometimes when a person is really kind of, you know, in a miserable state and lamenting, it behooves for him, he's reminded, no, don't worry. You give him hope and then you see, go back to the times when you were happy. And then even that situation is kind of brought under control. But Yudhishthir, Bhima is telling, you were such a person who were never elated in happiness too much and never distressed in grief too much. So it is not actually kind of, you know, is it destiny that is unfolding right now? Or is it just, be it your nature that you are showing right now? What is it? But this doesn't behoove you. And even if you kind of, you know, do not recollect this, please remember, now Bhima is telling, recall all the instances. Don't you remember how we were kind of treated in our childhood? I was fed poison, we were tried, kind of, you know, attempts were made on our life. How can you forget how Draupadi was kind of disrobed in the Asat Sabha? Then he says, how can you forget how we were abandoned and exiled to the kingdom, I mean, out of the kingdom into the forest? The hardships that we undergone and suffered in all these years. How can you forget the atrocities that Jarasandh committed against us? The battle of Chitrasen that we had to fight in the forest. How can you forget Kichaka kicking Draupadi? All these things he's trying to agitate Yudhishthir and get him back to consciousness. So Bhima tells all this. Finally Bhima tells, and there is this wonderful, wonderful thing that he says, that, oh my brother, oh dear Yudhishthir, right now, externally we have actually won the entire war by defeating the preceptors, Drona, Bhishma and everybody. So from that point of view, we all have kind of achieved success. But right now, what you are undergoing a war within your mind. And that war, no one else is going to help you fight except you yourself. And he says, if you do not become victorious in this war, which is the fight with your mind, if you expire fighting this war alone with your mind, you will have to take birth again and again and again till you overcome this. So, this is kind of, in kind of brief, of course, the discussion kind of goes forward. Yudhishthir replies to all of them one by one. Vyasadeva comes, ultimately Krishna comes. Then Krishna takes them to Bhishma Pitama. And then, as the Bhagavatam says, which will unfold, the grief of Yudhishthir gave birth to instructions of Bhishma Dev. So, in concise, basically what we kind of discussed was to highlight the aspect of conscious leadership that Yudhishthir Maharaj is showing in this particular section of the Bhagavatam. Now that kind of we have seen something from the Mahabharata, let us kind of see something from another scripture or another epic that we have, that is the Ramayana, and where there are millions of instances where we could kind of highlight conscious leaderships. But let's kind of see another little instance. This is when Vishwamitra Muni, he decides to come in the kingdom of Dasharatha Maharaj. Ram is around 12 years old at that time. And he comes and Dasharatha Maharaj is very, very happy seeing Vishwamitra. So basically it is explained like the happiness that Dasharatha Maharaj is feeling, Valmiki Muni describes. He tries to give a metaphor to describe best suited how happy is Dasharatha Maharaj. He says, it is like when a person has received, a farmer has received rains after a long time, who kind of drought. So that is the happiness that Dasharatha Maharaj is feeling seeing Vishwamitra. And then Valmiki says, no, it's not apt. Then he says, a person who has received nectar after a long struggle and tapasya. So then he doesn't get satisfied. Finally, Valmiki Muni says, actually the happiness of Dasharatha Maharaj is compared to a person who has begotten a child after a long time. Now, because that was the situation of Dasharatha Maharaj, Valmiki Muni is kind of happy. Okay, this is the metaphor which is matching most to him. Anyways, Vishwamitra Muni enters and then he expresses his desire of taking Ram to the forest with him. Why? To protect the sages from the atrocities and also the rishis who are performing yajnas and pujas which were being destroyed by Tataka and Marid Subahu. So Dasharatha, when he hears them, he becomes crestfallen. He says, my child, he kind of, in his mind, he says, how can Ram go? And then there is a shloka in the Ramayana where Dasharatha Maharaj infers to say that he is Rajiva Lochana Ram or he is Dasharatha Ram, not Parshuram. So this implies that he is merely 12 years old, and just as Rajiva Lochana Ram means like lotus, like flowers, his eyes start closing at 5:45 in the evening. And demons generally become active in the night. So what will this little boy do who kind of sleeps after the evening time? You take me instead. In the night time, I will fight the demons. Let my son remain here in the kingdom. So anyways, that agitates Vishwamitra Muni. And then Vishwamitra Muni basically says, all blessings to you, my king. This is in anger basically. And he says, you and your kingdom and your family, may all glories be unto you. And further kind of Dasharatha realizes, and then Vishwamitra kind of, he says, what do you know about who kind of your son Ram is? You are sitting with emerald crown on your head with kind of jewel studded in it, and I have matted hair. That is why I know who Ram is. You are sitting on such a big simhasan, whereas I am situated at the lotus feet of the Lord. That is why I understand who Ram is. You are sitting on a throne, I am sitting on you are having a bow and arrow, just I have a durva grass or a kusha mat. That is why I understand who Ram is. You think that you have given birth to Lord Ram, whereas the entire cosmic manifestation is present within the navel and abdomen of Lord Ram. And he says, you are thinking that I am the father of Lord Ram, whereas Lord Ram is the father of the entire creation and universe. So Vishwamitra, basically the shloka is Aham Vetu Mahatmanam Ramam Satya Parakrabam Vashishtopi Mahateja Veti Etemi Samupashtitaha. So Vishwamitra is telling Dasharath that Vashishta Opi, that means even Vashishta, that means Vishwamitra and Vashishta are like the sun and the moon. If he says morning, then Vashishta has to say evening. They will always agree to disagree. They will kind of never be speaking the same. If he has to say yes on this subject matter, Vasishtha will find out some other tarka on that subject matter and not agree. But on this subject matter, Vasishtopi Mahateja, Vishwamitra says, ask even Vasishtha. He will also agree with me. And Vasishtha duly agrees. Ram proceeds with Vishwamitra. And it is given in the Ramayana that, you know, Vishwamitra said only Ram I want, but then Lakshman comes in free. So basically, the purport is that a person cannot go without a shadow. So wherever Acharyas say, a person will be followed by a shadow, you cannot avoid that or not want that. So then Ram and Lakshman both go. So coming to actually basically where we are discussing, now Ram goes to the forest, Vishwamitra Muni trains them in Bala and Atibala mantras, awards them lot of knowledge and vidya. And now he kind of brings them and tells Ram, this is the demoness. And then the description of the demoness is given in the Ramayana, where Tadaka is kind of coming, and just by her mere steps, taking steps, thousands of animals kind of give up their lives just with mere fright of that demoness. It is said that just kind of by one whisk of her hand, she can kill hundreds of elephants. And then she ties the tail of one elephant to the trunk of another elephant and intertwines them. And 1,000 elephants constitute one earring of Tadaka. So you can imagine the size of this great demoness Tadaka. So this is described from the pages of the Kamba Ramayana in a beautiful poetic form. And Vishwamitra tells Ram, kill this demoness. Ram, at this point, pauses. Why? This is the quality again of a conscious leader. He is kind of, Vishwamitra is his muni, guru, sage. But he had no business to pause. But then Ram is thinking, my vidya is over, education is over. Right now, this is the first time I am getting the chance to kind of demonstrate my skills. Some kind of a real thing which I have learned over a period of years. And now what am I told to do? Kill a woman, although she may be a demoness, but then Ram is visualizing her as a woman at that particular point of time. So this is kind of the consciousness of a leader like Lord Ram also. And then Vishwamitra realizes this kind of thinking and consciousness of Ram at that particular point of time. So at that time, he immediately understands what Ram is thinking and he says, O Raghunandan, to protect the interest, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitayacha, the interest of cows, the interest of Brahmanas, who have been relentlessly tortured by this demoness Tadaka, you have to kill this demoness. Then he says, in the three worlds, apart from you, there is no one who can kill her. Then finally he says, that do not hesitate to kill her with the thought that she is a woman. Why? A kshatriya and a prince, if they have to kill a woman for the protection of any of the four varnas, sin will not accrue. You do not fear. So when Vishwamitra tells these words, he explains why Ram should kind of kill Tadaka, even though Ram is kind of thinking she to be a woman. So Ram, then also remembering Dasharath Maharaj's instruction that from now he is your mother, father, everything. So everything coupled together, he kind of shoots and kills Tadaka with kind of one arrow. So here, from the two epics, Mahabharata and Ramayana, we kind of see this principle of conscious leadership which is kind of depicted by Yudhishthir Maharaj in the Bhagavatam and by Ram, where also kind of in some of the commentators say, at the beginning of the war in Ramayana, Ram and Ravan came face to face. Ram almost defeated Ravan. He had a chance to kill him, but he lets him go. So he says, why did Ram let Ravan go? In the beginning of the war, he could have immediately kind of won the war. So one commentator, he gives a reason why Ram let Ravan go at that particular point of time. He says that Ram thought, this is the first time ever that Ravan has taken darshan of me. The Archa Vigraha, my Archa Vigraha, this is the first time ever that he has had an opportunity to take darshan. And then he feels, what if tonight Ravan has a change and transformation of heart just by taking the beautiful form, Archa Vigraha, of the Lord? And what if I kill him now, I might not be giving him another opportunity to reform? And what if he decides to come and surrender to me? So this is another example of the consciousness of great leaders. Maharaj has also given kind of lot of lectures on this subject, where Maharaj, you know, quotes Yad Yad Acharati Shrestas. He says that wherever he has gone and kind of spoken this, different strata of people, be the elite section or, you know, the general populace, one question kind of never evades him. Parents or mothers generally kind of pose this question to Maharaj. Maharaj, how do you bring up, I mean, how do we kind of ensure that our children, they kind of, you know, raise and grow up to become very nice individuals? So, Maharaj basically answers that question by telling that the example, more than anything else, you might end up giving them the best of facilities, the best of riches, the best of education. Whatever is there, you could give them the best. But more than anything else, it is the example that you set, your actions will speak louder than your words. So, this is what kind of Maharaj was kind of speaking. Whatever the parents might want to become their children, but what they do in their actual life, day in, day out, the child watches that and then imbibes that in his or her future. And also he says, leadership is not a post to enjoy. He says it's a grave responsibility where kind of, you know, it could be a leader of an organization, a community, or it could be just a leader of a few boys, or it could be a leader of your own family. So everyone is kind of a leader in his own strata or position. It's not kind of, we're not speaking of someone in particular who has millions of followers. So once you kind of, you know, it's a position where you have to have lot of, you know, responsibility, and trust is reposed to you as soon as you become or occupy the position of a leader. And once you are in that position, it happens that once people repose faith and trust to you, the people who are actually very close to you have the greatest opportunity to actually cause you the greatest of misery or pain. So, and then once you start climbing up the rank, I mean, rungs of, you know, positions or power, the more people kind of, you know, are against you. So the higher, Maharaj says, the higher you go, the greater you climb, the higher maybe the fall. So what should one do? The building basically has to dig deep and have a big, great foundation. And that foundation is the foundation of integrity. Foundation, our foundation has to be on integrity based on love, principles of sacrifice. Maharaj quotes various stories. We won't go into details, like something like, he quotes this example of Shibhi Maharaj. Shibhi Maharaj is somebody who, we all know the story. I mean, he is ready to give equivalent flesh for the pigeon. He didn't need to be. According to Dharma, the hawk, the pigeon is a natural food for the hawk. And Maharaj says, among the birds, the pigeon is the lowest of species. He terms it as wastes of birds. Maharaj calls that kind of pigeon species like that in his lecture. And then he says, he kind of would accrue no sin to let the pigeon die. Hawk is kind of, its dharma is to eat pigeon. I mean, he'll not accrue a sin as a king. But then still, because the pigeon comes to him seeking shelter, Shibhi Maharaj not only is ready to give that equivalent flesh of a pigeon, but he actually finally sits on the weighing scale saying, take my whole body, because he, that is the level of sacrifice, or, you know, you could say selflessness that one has to exhibit as a leader. Of course, it's a very tall order. It's easy to sit down here and speak all these things, but it kind of takes a lot to practice in one's life. So, these are kind of some things which Radhanath Maharaj was quoting in his talks of conscious leadership. Then he speaks about Shreyas, Priyas. There are a lot of things in that. So, in summary, basically you could say, what takes for one to, you know, you could say, what is that one quality which is required for a leader to establish something in his community, organization, family, kingdom, whatever it is? So the one thing which strikes out is culture. If you kind of delineate many things, culture stands strong. So healthy leaders who set healthy cultures will attract healthy people. And Radha Gopinath Prabhu gives the example of, you know, you could take a spoon of curd and mix it in a liter of milk. Let that curd, spoonful of curd, remain there for 6 to 8 hours. And then when you let it stay there, that culture of curd transforms the entire milk in a period of time. So that is the power of culture. Similarly, I mean, to recollect from our normal times, our cricket captain who was there a few years back, when he took charge, what did he do? He somehow got the implemented the culture of fitness, or he was very fanatic about that particular aspect. So when he consciously inculcated and imbibed that culture and tried to create that culture, the results were there in a period of years for everyone to see what difference it made in that particular field. So it depends on us as to what culture we want to create. As you could see one photo I was seeing where Buddhist monks are arranging slippers meticulously in their monastery. So that particular act has a deep impression on those who visit that particular monastery. If you, in our temple, you could take the example of Sankirtan Prabhu, the epitome of Vaishnava etiquette. You could see, I mean, someone comes inside the temple, basically just by interacting with him, his dealings, his demeanor, he could just transform the person at that particular gate or that particular door. So, and if you even go to his room and see, that saying is reminded, there is a place for everything and everything has a place. So that is the culture, or that is also an example. And also, unfortunately, there is a pitfall to culture in the modern Kali Yuga degraded situation, that cows are eating garbage and dogs are roaming in Rolls Royce today. So some or the other, basically that doesn't, because in today's day and world, people are attached to dogs, so I am not demeaning or belittling that. There is a place for everyone in Vedic culture, but just that cows are supposed to be inside the house and dogs are supposed to be outside the house. So right now, today, the situation has basically completely taken a reverse. People are more loyal and see faith and love and seek in their dogs than cows. So that is the effect of transformation of culture. The point I'm giving is just to highlight how this aspect, when you emphasize on certain culture, how it can have a transformatory effect on the entire society in general. To a certain extent, that there was an instance in America where a person, he was driving rashly and he overran and killed 6 ducks in an accident. What happened? The court of law imprisoned him and gave him heavy punishment. But then, such is the foolishness in today's law, that here they are showing a lot of compassion and pity to this act, where a mere person runs over 6 ducks and kills them, but they are not bothered about that whole own person who is giving the judgment might be having 6 ducks in 10 days for his dinner. So where is that thought process gone? People don't think of that at all. But then, that's the degradation of culture in today's day and age. So anyways, I was reading an article and it speaks about how do you create conscious leaders, or steps to create leaders who are conscious. There may be many additions, subtractions from this. There may be millions of other reasons, but I just found that. So I just thought I'll share that in concise and brief. So the first thing that a person needs to have to be conscious is he needs to focus on his personal health. Now, what is personal health? Spiritual, social, physical, relational, and financial. So these aspects should be covered in personal health. Then further, you might inquire what is finance. So you could say, a person might be earning 1 lakh rupees, but then he struggles to meet ends at the end of the month. Or a person who might be earning crores of rupees, or he might be struggling to meet ends, but a person who earns 1 lakh rupees, he has sufficient savings. So in that sense, if you are not healthy in terms of your finance, how can you take care of others to make them healthy? So similarly, there are many aspects like personal health constitutes emotional, social, relational, physical, financial. So all these things, when a person, he is nourished in abundance, then his personal health is in a good position, and then he will be healthy, and healthy leaders will attract healthy followers. And what happens if you are unhealthy? That will spill over, and naturally then the opposite will happen. And then the second point is, you invest in people, not in results. This is the principle of something like, a lot of effort is right now currently being given and shown especially in our temple and in our society at large, like devotee care. So there is kind of an elaborate manual and so much of information has been kind of disbursed. So that is kind of something that we all have discussed and are educated in that aspect. But this is a very important principle, so as to say, if one has to kind of become conscious. Because that is the principle that has to be kind of singularly, you know, prevalent throughout the entire organization, the community, the family. If taking care of people presides over everything else, then there'll be no problem basically anywhere and everywhere. And the third thing is you get rid of this us and them thinking. So what does this mean? Basically, if you eliminate in our daily conversations also, if you eliminate they and them whenever you need to talk, or you know, it was done by them like that, and then you don't correlate them with I and we. If you do that, what happens? The minute you say I and we, you start taking responsibility rather than kind of just blaming on somebody else. So it is said either you can blame or you can take responsibility. If you can either blame or you can either kind of make progress. Both cannot go hand in hand. So the choice is ours. I mean, that's why better kind of, you know, get rid of this us and them mentality. And finally, you know, we need to be very kind of alert and conscious and create firm boundaries. That means keep the negativity away and try to be as far as kind of possible. Let that not affect you. Otherwise, it will in turn kind of spill and affect the entire culture. So here it is said that if someone calls out for help, definitely devotees are there, people are there in the organization who will run and try to help them. But even then they are not willing and ready, and then some kind of negativity spills out from them, then you as a leader ensure that that doesn't kind of spill over to others in the organization. Why? Because, what you sow, you reap. So it is said that people generally quit their immediate kind of, you know, authorities, or they might quit kind of, you know, they choose to quit their entire, you could say, community or organizations altogether. But actually, the deeper point is people quit cultures more than anything else. So a healthy culture will attract healthy people, retain healthy people, and spit out toxic people. But if your culture is unhealthy, then toxic people will be encouraged to stay on, cling on, and healthy people will be spit out. So the choice is ours. So that's why from the pages of the Bhagavatam, we need to learn and understand, then imbibe the quality of leaders such as Yudhishthir Maharaj, who are kind of showing us the way. And the important aspect is, he did not kind of say, my way is the highway. Why? Because even after he expressed his opinion of wanting to go to the forest, neglecting all his duties and responsibilities as a king, when the discussions took place, at the end we see he came back again and agreed to rule the kingdom. He was open-minded to listen to the entire discussion, and common sense prevailed. Yudhishthir Maharaj ruled the kingdom, and the history is there for us that we are sitting today and discussing all about Yudhishthir Maharaj. That is the impact of such a leader. So I have spoken much more than my realization. I beg forgiveness for any offenses that I have committed knowingly, unknowingly. Kindly forgive me. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Nithai Gaur Premanande.
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.